The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, I gotta grab the microphone. It's not even in front of my face. Look out. Welcome to the True Wealth radio show, where it's the greatest Tuesday you've had all day. And all right, I got the microphone in front of me now.
Yeah, you pushed the buttons and you went to talk and you realized
nothing
is there.
I was like, what have I done? It's like, wow, he has such a great view of the monitors. Well, yeah, there's no microphone. Well played. So, that's where shows you where our head is at. Welcome, welcome, gang. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio, as always,
Matt Dixon.
Matt,
yes.
Is it just me, or has the world had just the investing world just seems to have like temporary insanity?
It sure seems like it. I mean, the news isn't really helping.
Yeah,
is
I mean,
it?
Is that the plea? Can we make that plea? Like, no, I'm sorry, markets are just gonna. You just have to give them a pass. It's temporary insanity. You can't hold it to a standard right now.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like.
It's totally what it feels like to me. I gotta take these off. I'm getting like a weird echo in my own head.
The headphones are coming off. David's
it's true.
Serious.
Now we're just talking to each other in the studio, talking to you all on the radio, and for those of you listening on the podcast, talking to you. We were talking about what ought this show be about. What's the theme of the day? And I think my favorite was trigger warning.
Trigger warning.
Right?
Elaborate. Trigger in what way?
Trigger warning, as in, you know, we're now we joke about, or some people, it's not a joke, right? The need for safe spaces and so forth. Because if somebody gets triggered, it's going to create an emotional response. And this can be either a microaggression or any number of other things, right?
Have you seen a lot of emotional responses to the market yet?
I think it's natural and normal.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are a few different types of folks out there. Those are the folks that I'm gonna suggest. Some of you are just blissfully unaware, right? I don't look at it, don't care, it's gonna do whatever it does, whatever. Okay, great, low stress environment for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, ignorance is bliss. There are some of you that are like, no, you know, I'm long term and I'm okay with that. I see it happening, but I'm not going to let it ruffle my feathers.
Okay, that's person number two.
Person number two.
What's person number three?
There's some people that are like, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of in this right now. And is this going to get worse? Because I'm starting to wonder. And
okay.
And do I need to do something? I don't want to be hasty here. I feel like it should be long term, but if this goes down for me, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're aware, you're noticing, you're starting to kind of question your sanity a little bit and say, you know, should I be doing something? And then there's probably a few more phases to this one, but the next one is, my gosh, what should I do? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the person
saying,
like, this is tough. Oh my gosh, what should I be doing? And then there's the person that is really beating themselves up, saying, I knew it. I said this all along. I was supposed to do this, and I didn't, and I'm an idiot, and I shouldn't have believed anybody, and this happens every time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're somewhere in that spectrum, right? Like, we all live somewhere in there. And the reason that I call it, the show, a trigger warning is, I'm poking fun, because the whole idea of a microaggression, I just discard.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I discard in the name of free speech. It's like, well, even if it's true, who cares? Right. You don't have a right to not get offended. Sorry. And if you disagree with me, now you've had a microaggression. That's what you get. In fact, it's directly aggressive. Right. Like, I don't care if you don't believe in free speech. We don't get along. You know, you can say things I don't agree with. I'm OK with that. OK.
Yeah.
Markets are totally OK with it. Turns out your emotions. Market doesn't care. That is probably the best reality scenario out there, is that, oh, well, markets aren't fair. They're not nice to my feelings. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else does either about that. I mean, like, yeah, it's a shame, but not going to change things. So your emotions really are a problem when it comes to investing.
Yeah.
Right? And this is statistically played out in many different tests that have been done, or studies that have been done about how investors behave. And it's really common, that investors, sort of the self-inflicted wound is the worst one for investors.
How do you manage your own emotions, right? Because like it's natural. I mean, even though you've been doing this a long time, you have emotions that come into play when it comes to investing. How do you keep yourself in check? What's a few good ways that you kind of monitor your own
emotions? So it's a great question, Matt. And I think there are a few things. One, anytime you do something a lot, right? And you do it for a long time, just the accumulated hours develop into expertise. And the expertise tends to, there's a whole process called the Dunning-Kruger effect, in fact. Like when you don't know very much, you think you're an expert. And then as you become more of an expert, you think you know less and less until you actually start to lose your confidence because there's so much to know. And how could anybody know all of it? And really, you're just an idiot. You know, it's impossible. The field's just way too complicated.
You're going Princess Bride on me when they're, you know, sitting there with the drinks and
inconceivable,
inconceivable.
But it's a funny thing that we have this flaw in our logic that the less you know, the more confident you often are that you do know something. I mean, we see this. It's real common in politics. Everybody just knows exactly what the country needs if they just listen to that person. And then if you were to actually be thrown into the lion's den, metaphorically, and start to look at the policy and the complexity, you go, oh, man, okay, you know, I forgot about that thing, or I didn't even know about that other thing, or if I pull this thread, it breaks this other one. And that's not to suggest the system is somehow okay because it's complex and therefore we should give it a pass. No, I'm just saying it's rarely that simple. Right? I mean, there's just a lot of moving parts to it. For heaven's sake, I mean, my family has trouble. If we'll have trouble on a group vote for dinner. Now, try to do that over the entire country or the world.
Like, yeah,
there's just not going to be agreement. So
the first one was being...
Well, you'd be developing expertise. Yeah. But probably one of the two of the things that I think are great is, one, have a sounding board. So, you know, we use an investment committee on purpose, right? So that's the idea that getting multiple people to come in and examine the problem together. So at least
that's a huge one.
Yeah, at least it keeps, you know, somebody can usually talk you off the ledge. It's like rarely does everybody panic at the same time, especially if they're all experts in their field. And careful who you surround yourself with. There's a difference between a mastermind group and an echo chamber.
Okay. Everyone who's aligned in the same way, we're all going gold.
Right.
That's different.
The echo chamber is not the place to live if you're looking for somebody to check your ideas. And then probably the simplest one for everybody out there listening is rules. Right. I mean, you don't necessarily think about that, but this is something that I learned not super early in my career, but it's been more than 15 years ago. That I had a mentor that was teaching me about managing money. Now, that sounds interesting, maybe, because you'd think that, well, my investment person knows how to manage money. Not necessarily so. It's many, many investment firms, what they do is a lot of sales training, and then they train their representatives to sort of promote the company's research. You know, we have a team of people that have all this stuff that they do for us. It's not really me that does it. I'm the interface between you and them to help get it. You know, you have all these specific customer service needs. I'm here to address those needs. They're there to do the investment stuff, and I'm going to connect you two together, and I'll be the, you know, concierge.
Right. Right.
You know, I'll be the facilitator.
Man.
It
Almost
is a middleman.
Yeah.
Right. And so they don't necessarily, and that's not to say that's how all advisors are either. So don't. I'm not throwing everybody under the bus here. I'm just saying be aware of who you're engaging with. Money management is a skill set, and one of the things that I was sort of taught to do is journal about your investment moves.
Yeah.
Why did you make them, and how, and what were the decision factors, and then afterwards evaluate how they played out, and were your assumptions correct? What can you learn from it? How can you get better at it?
It's the same thing as an NFL player watching film after the game,
yeah,
right?
It
like
really
you,
is.
You can't spot your errors unless you've documented it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's good advice.
If you think about, I mean, Matt, how many times have you brought an idea to me and I've said, okay, tell me why? Right?
Every time almost.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's a,
why are you thinking that?
Walk me through the story. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah.
Right. And what I'm effectively doing is saying
you're vetting it.
Yeah. Well, I'm suggesting defend why. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, you're selling me on this, but you need to sell yourself too. What makes you think this is real?
Sure.
Now, there have been plenty of times where I've agreed with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There have been some times you've talked yourself out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when you actually start breaking it down and having to verbalize, why am I doing this? Sometimes, you know, you get to a point where you're like, wow, that actually doesn't make much sense.
Right. And I think that's the important thing. So sounding board, mm-hmm. place to vet ideas. But those rules,
the rules of
are
engagement.
Huge because they can really help you to sift through things. So maybe it prevents.
Give me an example of a rule that you might set. Just a broad rule.
Really simple rule. Let's say that I don't want to trade any stock below $5 a share.
Okay. So you don't want to dabble in penny stocks as a general rule.
Right.
Sure.
And that rule isn't necessarily hard and fast, believe it or not, because every now and then you get scenarios where high ticket stocks are low price stocks in terms of dollars, but it's a good rule to start with. And then a second rule might be, I need to look at the average daily trading volume of a stock mm-hmm. and its price because I want to see how much volume that trades. And you think to yourself, what does that have to do with anything? Well, that's a mechanical rule because I don't want to accidentally buy something and be illiquid. Like I can't sell it because
there's no buyers.
There's no buyers, right? No I become volume. A market maker in this thing by accident. And if you don't know what that means, that's exactly why you should learn these rules because mm-hmm. it could be a really hard lesson to discover, oops, I became a market maker in that stock and I'm structurally trapped.
Yeah.
Bad news. Okay, so I think those are simple rules, but there can be other rules that say things like, I don't like to invest in companies that don't have free cash flow.
Okay.
Okay. Now that can be tricky. I mean, because how do you define that? Maybe it's based on, EBITDA or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, they have debt, but they can service the debt. And I want to make sure that after all of their expenses and debt service, they still have money left over. Okay, that's cash flow, but they also have debt. Then you're looking at your debt to equity ratios and you're looking at sales and forecasts and all the other. You could see there's a million ways to slice and dice this thing. But starting with the simple rules are at least a way to filter out some of the things that you would know would be immediately disqualified.
Would you loop in spots where you're going to say, I'm going to take a profit here versus I'm going to cut losses if it gets to this point? Would you also put that in that category?
So that's a little different. That is about trading rules,
okay.
right? Or position sizing
more than just
rules.
Investing rules.
So, but it's still rules. I mean, mm-hmm. it totally falls under the category. We should talk a little bit about that. We should talk about some of the other rules, but I'm getting the flag here that we better take a break.
They want their profits, don't they?
Like, evidently, we have advertisers that are really craving your ears. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
I know. Who wants to be limited like that? It's like... So, anyway, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Evidently, the music was playing and it's time for us to get back. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio with...
Matt Dixon.
Matt, we're podcasting this jam. Is that true?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Every week... like clockwork.
So you know because you're the one that's going to post it.
Yeah.
That's the best.
It's the laborious process. So if you're not tuning into the podcast, boo. Like, use it.
Right? And the beauty is the podcast is sort of slimmed down of the advertisers whom this station greatly appreciates, but they're not on the podcast, right? It's kind
that's
of
right.
a clip, 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 so we move right on through. So you can listen to the entire show in like 42 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we were talking rules. We talked about trigger warnings today. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the trigger warning, of course, the joke is that a lot of people talk about emotions. They're manipulated all the time. We know that it's really popular in political science these days. We see it in the news, right? And mm-hmm. why? It's very simple. Because if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And so we need to get your attention. If you're going to use the web or something like that, we got to get you, right? Hey, there's 15 things that'll keep you from going broke in retirement. You're not going to believe number six, right? I got to see that list, man. I got to see it.
And I'm guilty of clicking on those too. It's so pitiful. It's like, oh, this
you know looks why they keep showing up?
Because you click on them.
Because it works.
Yep.
That's it. So it's up to us to wise up. And of course, this will be a marketing battle for your eyeballs. Okay. Just like this show, if we're honest,
is a marketing battle for your ears.
This show, we pay for this time, right? As an advertisement, it's a long show. Now, we take a really unusual, I think, approach to this, which is, you know what? Let's try a really transparent process of transferring information and confidence. And if what we do aligns with what you, the listener, need, and you think, you know, these guys seem all right, I think I'm going to give them a shout. Great, it works out. But it's not a pressure thing, it's a fit thing. We know what we're about, we know how we do business and how what's important to us. It's a big world out there. Find the person that you fit well with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're comfortable saying that there's people out there that are like, yep, that's who I want. I just want somebody that, you know, like, I'm not clairvoyant. Matt, are you? Can you predict the future?
I wish.
So I'm lying to you. I can predict the future all day long. I just don't know if it's right. I can guess at the future all you want. Like, you want guesses? No problem. You want those guesses to be right? Oh, wait a second. What? So, you know, I don't know the future. I can sometimes play the odds pretty well.
Can you give me an educated guess?
I can do that.
Okay.
Right? And our educated guesses have worked out pretty decent over time.
Be like right more than you're wrong?
I think so.
Okay.
Right? I mean, yeah. I'm not going to give you a percentage or anything, but I will say that we've done pretty well. We don't bat 1,000 when it comes to investment picks moment to moment. Right? We've had losers.
I feel like if you don't have losers, then you really have the crystal ball. Like,
well, or you're cheating, right?
Yeah.
So that's the trick. I confess up on air. We owned PayPal and watched it go down and down and down until we got back to our starting price. And we're like, never mind, you know? Mm-hmm. And we lost 40% off of our highs. I mean, it's just ugly.
Right.
Glad we got out when we did. I think it was a 125 or something, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood. And then it fell to like 80. So it just kept
glad you cut it when you did.
Yeah. So that's the thing, right? I think it was Winston Churchill that one time said, look, no matter how far down the path you go, the wrong path, turn back. Right? It's like, yeah, right? It's, you know, it's one thing to buy and hold investments that are good investments. It's another thing to just ride a, you know, something into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, we made a transition. Now, here's an interesting rule for you. I'm not giving you investment advice here that is specific, but this is good advice generically to think about when you're going to buy an investment. Okay? So here's a free tip for everybody.
If you do something really corny and say buy it low and sell it high, I'm going to like reach my long arm across the thing and slap you.
Yeah, it's no,
head.
This is real advice.
Okay.
Pretend that you don't already own the investment and ask yourself, would I still buy it today?
Oh, you're saying if you already own it?
Not necessarily. If you don't own it, you're looking at it saying, am I willing to buy it today? Do I like it today because I think it'll be worth more later?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you own something and it's dropped in value, but you look at that and say, but would I buy it today if I didn't already own it?
Hmm.
Okay. That's a pretty good litmus test for whether or not you believe in that investment.
A lot of people start there, I've noticed, but then the moment they get into it and they hit some choppy waters and the price goes down a little bit, they forget about the fact that they really believe in the product. They really believe in the company and they really want to own it long term. And then they get out of it really quick and then the price recovers and it goes higher. And then, you know, they're just sitting there. They're just kicking themselves.
So then that's what makes a market.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, the reality is it takes buyers and sellers. But I can tell you that it's the people that enter into these transactions with a lot more emotion and a lot less data. They're the ones that stand to be a problem. Now, I can give you like an easy example of this one. Okay. Imagine for a minute that you are in the market to purchase a home.
Okay.
Matthew.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
and you find yourself staring at a property that is just perfect. It is on the river.
Mm-hmm.
It's got
access.
I mean, you could plunk your boat in right there.
Anchor the boat on the bank. Yep. That's the dream.
You are able to, and you know, you could go upriver or downriver, and some of your favorite fishing holes are within 10 minutes.
I'm really starting to like this show.
Okay.
Keep talking.
This place is beautiful. It is, you know, the yard's already done. It's got enough space. You know, great spot for family, not too far from work. I mean, it's it's like spot on.
Okay.
Okay. And you've done your homework, or wait, in this case, our example, you haven't done your homework. Mm. You just see a price tag, and this is a $4 million property.
Okay.
Okay. Now, first of all, probably not getting it, because how are you going to get a hold of $4 million?
Right.
Is it a good deal?
At $4 million around here, I'm going to say no.
Okay. $1 million. Is it a good deal?
Possibly.
$500,000. Is it a good deal?
Yeah. Now we're getting real close.
Yeah. And the answer is still, it's a trick question. You don't have enough information.
It's true.
Right? Because—
Is there black mold?
Yeah. Well, what if I were to tell you, well, the house may be fine, but you can't get utilities to it. It's 100% off grid, and there's no way to heat it, cool it, or get running water to it. So it's beautiful, but now you've got to convince your lovely bride that you guys are going to be using an outhouse for the rest of your life.
Tricky.
Okay.
That's going to be a hard sell.
It's going to be a pretty hard sell. Now, for $10,000, you might just say, I'd love to have a cabin on the river, and you'd still do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for $1 million, my guess is that's not priced right.
Yeah.
Now, all of you listening, do you understand that when it comes to investments, that's how this stuff works, right? To the folks that, and I will pick on Tesla for a minute, because I've done that before on this program, like even a couple years ago. I was looking at Tesla and said, I can't buy Tesla. It was trading for $500 a share back then.
And the P.E. ratios.
Well, the P.E. ratio was like 1,300.
Yeah.
Right? So for every $1,300 that Tesla, actually P.E. was zero initially. It had nothing. No earnings.
Right, because there was no
earnings.
There
was no P.E. ratio back then. And then it was $1,300. So for every $1,300 that Tesla made, you got $1.
Mm-hmm.
And that ratio has steadily improved as Tesla is now earning money. Now, I can tell you all, without making this investment advice of any kind, we do own Tesla in one of our investment models.
Now, but
currently.
Not when the P.E. ratios currently. Were at $1,300.
And somebody could argue that, well, what if you'd have bought that 2 years ago and you could have bought it for $400 instead of buying it for over $700 when we did?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd have made way more money. I said, that is true, but it did not meet our rules test.
Yep.
Right? Which was that it was not, in our mind, investable as anything other than speculative.
Speculation, yeah.
Right? And so we did not want to break our own rules at that time. And it was tempting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's a darling, right? Come on, Tesla. Tesla's now, by market cap and revenue, bigger than General Motors and Ford.
Right.
How nuts is that?
It's pretty crazy.
It's a company that 30 years ago wasn't there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ford and General Motors, they built the automotive industry for most of the planet, certainly in the United States. I mean, one could argue that Germany had a lot of influence as well, but that's huge. And Tesla has supplanted them.
So talking about the different rules and ways that we gauge investments, we've talked about a few things. Do we want to talk about how we gauge based on dollars versus percent at all?
So that's not really a rules thing. But
it's not
it's
a rules
important.
Thing, but it's a gauge for how we measure investments,
so,
which we kind of started talking about a little bit.
We did. So you know, that's a pretty interesting one. And here's the thing. We're up at the hour. I feel like our investors and our listeners, we really should have the conversation.
Do we give them too much information? Are they on information overload?
No, it's not that.
Okay.
It's like, I think we should just grab the break.
Okay.
And so when we come back, if you're wondering, like the question is, what yardstick, what measuring tool do you need to use for your investments? This is super important and often overlooked. So we're going to cover that when we come back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn and
Matt Dixon.
Matt?
Yes.
What's your favorite yardstick?
One that has purple and glitter on it.
Glitter purple yardstick. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what you should measure your investments with. I think we're done here.
Okay.
Good show. All right.
It's got unicorns engraved in it too somewhere.
You know, I have three daughters. I could see this being a big hit.
Oh, yeah?
Glitter purple unicorn yardstick.
Is that how we inspire people to want to do math again, like actually measure stuff?
If it works, I would run with it,
okay.
Truthfully. So I don't think that's what we mean when we're talking investments.
Darn.
Yeah, I know, right? I think we mean something different.
More along the lines of dollars versus percents?
So more along the lines of dollars versus percents.
Okay.
I think that investors, and if this is you, first of all, stop it, okay? Which is, we have to decide how are you going to measure whether or not things are working. Now, this is about investment performance, okay? Now, the question is absolute or relative?
Okay.
And is it going to be, because what people will do is they'll try to do a little bit of both, and that's cheating.
I have a feeling I know where you're going with this. Like, well, if I said, Dave, you lost $200,000.
Right, and that's that's a number. When you say $200,000, but if I was to say, but you have $10 million and you lost $200,000, I go, well, $200,000 is real money.
Right.
But on a percentage basis, that's barely moving the needle on $10 million.
Right. But if you had $200,000 and you lost $200,000.
Yep, that's 100% loss. That's pretty catastrophic. And the issue comes down to, I mean, the markets think in percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And I see people make this mistake a lot because there's something that happens that you have to be aware of. This is an example of sort of a mental and emotional hangup. It's actually a misinterpretation, a fail, but it's normal. People do it all the time. Okay. And what it is they will do what we call an anchoring bias.
Okay.
Okay. So imagine that I buy ABC stock for $100 a share. Okay. It goes up to $150 a share and then it falls back down to $125 a share.
Okay.
Two different types of anchoring bias that can occur right here. First one is somebody that says, well, you know, I only paid $100 for it. It's worth $125. I win.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there's the person that says, this thing used to be $150 a share. Now it's $125. I lose.
Mm-hmm. Two completely different mindsets.
And you go,
analyzing the exact same situation.
Wait a second here. How are we determining whether or not this is a successful investment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One person thinks that they just lost, 20% or something, you know? Another person thinks that they're up 25%. So it matters where you're measuring from, right? Mm. And there's not a right or wrong answer to this, but what I would challenge you is that you need to commit to being consistent with the measuring method, okay? If you only measure off of the high water mark that you've ever had, you will pretty much be disappointed often.
I'm imagining like a long jumper, right? Who like nails that jump perfectly. Their foot's right on the board. They jump 20 feet. And then, you know, the next guy runs and he jumps from 5 feet behind the board, you know, and comes up a foot short and loses. He's like, I jumped 25 feet. Well, your foot wasn't on the board. We got to measure from the same spot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Physically covered more distance than the other, but lost the competition on technicalities there, which you should lose if you do that, right? Because the rules be rules. It's a good example, in a sense. I also think that it happens that people will, when they say they split their measurements, it's like, well, hey, I started with $100,000 and then I made 10%, but I lost $10,000, right? Well, losing 10% is $10,000. Making 10% is $10,000. So on the way up, let's measure in percentages because, well, I want to beat everybody else. So I want to, you know, oh, the S&P's up 13%. Well, I made 15%. I win. Okay. And then S&P's down 10%. I'm down $2,000. Oh, man, I lost $2,000. Like, wait a second.
Yeah.
You know, now you've reframed it so that no matter what, you're always on. Yeah. Like, it's always hard to win. Right.
Yep.
And it just doesn't work that way. You don't get infinity upside and zero downside as an investor. That's a violation of the rules of risk and reward.
Unless you have a printing press.
Well, again, cheating.
Yeah, cheating.
Right? I mean, like, if you can cheat, then that can work, right? So it's kind of like if you want to gamble and you're going to, you know, load the deck or something. Well, yep. That's not gambling, is it?
Right.
So that's, we call that cheating.
Yeah.
So if you know the outcome, then that's inside information, which it turns out isn't just frowned upon. It's against the law.
Yeah, we could ask Martha Stewart about that, couldn't we?
Right? Yeah. And there are others too, but she's certainly the most famous, or at least the most famous of late.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like that's one of those scenarios where we just need to pick your measuring stick, right? And if it's going to be a purple, sparkly unicorn yardstick, great. Okay. But just use it consistently. Maybe another way to describe it is pick your unit of measurement, right? Are you using inches or meters? Okay, because you're going to get a very different result depending on which measure you choose. And I think that that's, it's a, especially in periods like when the markets are down right now. Like, I don't know if you knew that or not. They're down. Okay. And on an absolute basis, people have less money in their account than they did at the end of December in most cases, unless you've added to it or you've had a really fortunate spell of what you were invested in, or you're in a super ultra conservative mix.
But compared to a couple years ago, you're probably positive.
Well, compared to, yeah, compared to 2 years ago, you should be up.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to December, you're probably down.
Yeah.
If you're typical. Okay. Yep. You know, my suspicion is in the next few years, it's all going to come out in the wash, right? Now here's the dirty little secret, everybody. 5 years from now, it probably all comes out in the wash. And I have to say probably, because if I don't say that, then I'm making some investment guarantee, and you can't do that.
So should we be losing sleep? Should we be panicking?
Not in my opinion.
Right.
Because, well, here's the thing. What exactly does worry do?
Yeah, what does it accomplish?
Nothing, right? I mean, great. Now you're stressed out, and you still can't impact it.
Mm-hmm.
Should you, you know,
should you be mindful? Yes.
Well, but you can be aware, but
yeah.
This, some people just wring their hands. That's the idea that I must do something. No, what you must do is be patient and allow the markets to do what they do best, which is make money and outpace inflation over time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why we're diversified. It's, you know, some companies come and they go. So you don't put all your eggs in that one basket. You know, you spread them around.
So don't put all of your eggs in the Netflix basket.
That would be unfortunate.
It sure would, wouldn't it?
Right? Now, there's a classic example of what's yardstick. You know, I've owned Netflix for 10 years. You still have profits, right? But you're off a good 50%+ from where you were in December.
Yeah.
So, you know, half your account's gone. Those of you that invested in Apple and have the majority of your net worth in Apple, you're still okay, but you're off your highs.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Everybody is, right? Mark Zuckerberg lost lot of net worth.
Do you remember how much that was? I knew it at one point. How
I mean, he was
billions?
Over he lost over 100 billion at one point, like 96 billion, I remember. So I think he was over 100 billion, and that's been a really massive beat down of net worth.
Yeah.
Right. When Facebook went from over like over 300 to below 200.
Mm-hmm.
So it's darn near 50%
something. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the vast majority of his net worth.
The FANG stocks Facebook. Really kind of just took it on the chin, didn't they?
They did. And, you know, we can even discuss why. Was it time? Probably. Because a lot of the underlying stocks of these indexes have already been beat up a lot. Right. The companies that are surviving well right now are the companies that are, they're pretty boring and they make money, right?
That's a novel concept. Do you make money?
They're safe. It's you know, pretty safe. It's like, well, you kind of make money in all the different economies. We maybe make a little less, but we're not going anywhere. And so, yeah, consumer staples, things like that. Well, do people stop eating and drinking and shaving and you know, bathing and stuff. It's like, well, no, I mean, that's still happening even in a recessionary environment. Like, well, okay, then those are the safe havens that people run to. And as people, you know, run to the safety, that's a bid, meaning there's more buyers than sellers in that space. Price goes up.
Should we talk about the different sectors?
We can, but we got to take our last evil profit break
first.
I know.
Okay.
But now it leaves our listeners with something to look forward to when we come back.
Ooh, sector rotation.
All right. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show.
We've been crushing it today, David. Just crushing it.
I will admit that last week, having been sort of hard on me, just for, like, it was just a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And the markets didn't help. I was really grateful for Monday and Tuesday and this relief rally.
Okay.
Not sure that it's going to follow through, but my suspicion is, without me predicting the future, right, and making promises, but my suspicion is we'll probably be all right because I think the Federal Reserve has really forecast a lot of what they're going to do.
You know, so you're kind of saying it might have priced itself in a little bit.
Well, I don't know that the market's going to have a lot of surprise data.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's going to be some confirmation of suspicions. It's going to go from we have a pretty good indication to now we know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, we had a negative GDP print. That's probably, if you look under the numbers, not as bad as it looked. We have still a lot of inflation. Fed's not going to be letting their pedal off the gas as far as rates as a result of that. A little bit of an inverted yield curve, which suggests that we're probably not going to lean into this thing too hard because the long end of the curve, nobody's willing to free up the capital. So it looks to me like money's not going to make a rush for the door out of the stock market mm-hmm. because of this setup, because there's nowhere else for it to run.
Yeah, because, you know? I mean, even though I think bonds hit a new high, well, not all-time high, but a recent high of like
yields.
3%, right?
Yeah, yields, yeah. Right? And so when yields are going up, it's because bonds are going down.
Right.
So you wouldn't necessarily want to go invest in bonds right now. If rates are going to go up, that means you're going to lose money in bonds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to buy those because they still look expensive compared to a rising rate. You don't necessarily want to buy real estate, which looks expensive, and it's going to be harder to get access to money for borrowers. So it's likely that there's going to be a reduction in demand because the constraints to accessing money. So real estate looks expensive. We already know commodities are really expensive, and that's part of the inflation cycle and supply chain constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got, with fuel prices up, shipping super expensive, I think we're going to see there's some demand destruction at play here. But that's because of that, because of all the inflationary pressures, Fed has to keep raising rates. If they keep raising rates, then you're going to stay out of the bond market.
Right.
And if they keep raising rates, it's going to keep putting pressure on the real estate market. So if real estate and bonds are ugly, commodities are already inflating. So, I guess money, maybe you can make the argument that you could go into commodities, but that feels like danger zone because mm-hmm. it's pretty aggressive. And I'm looking at the price of stocks that have been beat way up and going, again, I'm not making a recommendation here. I'm just telling you that these things are on sale compared to where they were 12 months ago. And if you think their profits are going to continue to increase because of economic expansion, and I don't know, but you know they're guiding that they are. If that's true, then we have P/E ratios a lot cheaper than they were 5 months ago.
Hmm.
Right? We looked this morning, right?
We did. Yeah. I mean,
S&P 500 P/E ratios are back to a level that we haven't seen since 2020.
Yeah. So it's come way down.
Yeah, it has. It really has. So I think that you just have to look at where else can investors put their money right now. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, you can put it in cash for a little while, but if inflation's running at 8.5%,
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to leave it in cash very long because that's like losing 8.5% purchasing power.
Right.
And if you're thinking to yourself, well, you look at the stock market, it's down 9, 10, 11%. So that is true. So if you could have perfectly timed the market to be in cash and to move back in 9% lower into the markets, you look like you're sitting in pretty tall cotton.
Mm-hmm.
But that is...
that's a dangerous field to play in.
That's, I mean, you're really trying to run the gauntlet here. I mean, you got to have a lot of things go right.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to do it again and again and again. Ah, you know, I've...
until
I just play
it
the
doesn't
odds
work,
on this
yeah.
Well, it's... it sounds so doable, but nobody's cracked the code.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean, it's that's, pretty that's hard the to thing. Come back from a, yeah.
If you consider, if it was so easy, everybody'd be doing it. And I got to tell you, that 23-year-old that cracked the code of the market that's selling you his 10 best stock picks online, let me ask you this logic-bound question for a moment.
Okay.
Okay. If you had a magic money printing press...
would you give it away?
Well, not just that. And you could print as much money as you wanted because you'd cracked the code to the market now.
Yeah.
Do you need to sell the code to anybody else?
Yeah, do you
else?
Need someone's $5 a month subscription?
Like, why are you selling that?
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're going to do is give everybody else the exploit that you have, and then you're not going to have the exploit anymore. It's going to break because too many people learn about it.
Yep.
So, I mean, just intuitively, if you see this, I mean, you should just look at that and roll your eyes and go, ha-ha. But this is that stupid clickbait, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to believe number six. Okay, you're not going to believe that this person doesn't exist and this is like...
it's you, like a robot type.
Well, here's my favorite too. The people that say, oh no, here's how you could have turned $5,000 into $1.4 million. And they'll show you the path. Start with this obscure penny stock, right? Mm-hmm. It makes 700%. Then you sell it, you take 100% of the money and you buy this next penny stock and it goes up 500%. And you sell it, make 100% profit and do this again and again. You know what they won't tell you? In that whole scenario?
The odds of you being exactly right.
Oh, not that. That's actually better. This is the part they won't tell you. That's a penny stock. If you show up and put $5,000 into it, you would have changed the trading history.
Mm.
Because there's so few That's participants true. That as soon as you showed up, you would have completely skewed the way that trade played out. You show up and you become 10% of the market doing something like that. And then you have to find a way to get out. And so you're completely changing the dynamic of a pump and dump scheme at that point because
yeah.
you're a new player to the market, right? A stock that trades $1 billion a day, your $5,000 is invisible. It's a rounding error. In mm-hmm. a fraction of a second, it's gobbled up. But for a stock that trades $15,000 a day, you're third of the trade for the day.
Right. You made an you think, actual influence
You are the market.
Price. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, these things are, they're just scams, right? And they get away with it in the disclosure of, you know, these are hypotheticals and not actually did this side or the other. Like, again, if you could print money, why would you share the secret? What you want to do is generate interest in the stocks that are super cheap that you already
bought. Because
you
already own them, yeah.
Because that's how you pump them up, is to advertise them and get other investors that are in the middle of FOMO, right?
And
fear of missing out,
then
to
you
get
dump
them to throw
your
money.
10% holding, and then you cash out on everyone else's misery.
Exactly.
Yep.
You're cashing out as everybody else is thinking they've got the next moonshot.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff drives me bananas. And
I feel like we see that a lot with crypto right now.
Right. We see that in crypto.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I mean, this is the same thing as like that Nigerian prince that keeps wanting to give you money. It's like, it's not real. Okay. I'll keep making jokes about that because it's that absurd. Okay.
I like it.
You know, it's like when Microsoft calls you and tells you that you have a virus on your computer and that you need to deal with it. And so they're here to help, right? And all you have to do is load up this antivirus and give them your bank account number.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop. Right? Just stop. So sometimes you have to just kind of have that logic in your head of like, first of all, why would they know? And if they know, why wouldn't they just do it themselves? Because
right.
they're already in my computer, right? No. So there you go. It's just these logic traps of, really? Did you got sucked into that? Yikes.
Mm.
And I say that now, there'll be some elaborate scheme that I'm going to have to watch out for. But there's always phishing schemes. There's always people trying to steal your identity. It's real. Yep. So anyway, don't get suckered into the dumb stock move game of, you know, somebody cracked the code. That's so not how it works.
If you had to summarize today into like one general like blurb, what would you summarize for our listeners?
Can I use like a semicolon?
Please do. It's one of my favorites when writing. Like, I abuse semicolons. Say,
successful investors avoid using their emotions, set good rules, and have realistic expectations.
There's the SparkNotes version. Okay. I like it.
And from there, you know, and they grade themselves and learn and improve.
So when I'm posting the podcast tomorrow, you're going to see that in the description box. I'm
going to
direct quote you. You just saved me 5 minutes of thinking time. So.
Perfect.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Well, as we near the end of the hour, here's the bottom line. If it's not something you are interested in doing for yourself, there are those out there that would help. And I encourage you to find somebody. You know, find a good partner and advocate that can help you navigate the financial landscape. Everybody needs to do this. Everybody should be taking care of their finance. If you don't have that person, Matt, can they call us?
I sure hope so. We have a number. And I'm going to go slow. Normally, I rattle it off. So I'm giving you time to get out that pencil and paper. So it's 541-375-0898.
All right. You heard it here first, but you won't be last. We're out of time for now, so we got to run. Until next time, this has been Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth from littlejohnfs.com. You can find us there, too. Catch you next time on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.